Now let's get into this 14th chapter, because it goes hand in hand with the 13th chapter. In the first two verses of the 14th chapter, "For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob, and will yet choose Israel, and set them in their own land, and the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob." Now this is talking about the return of Israel. When Babylon is destroyed, Israel's going to be allowed to return. And these first two verses tell about their return. The Lord should have mercy on Jacob, and will yet choose Israel. Now, Israel is going to look like there's going to be some very bleak and dreary times in which you'll be forsaken by God. But he says he will yet choose Israel and set them in their own land. You'll get to go back. "And the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob." I don't know exactly what this word "strangers" means. Whether it means that these people who had been strangers in another land, or whether it means that they brought with them certain slaves from the captivity. And I'm inclined to think the latter, because of what this next verse says. "And the people shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Lord for servants and handmaids." And I understand this "servants and handmaids" is really slaves. They'll have some slaves there that they bring with them. "And they shall take them captives, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors." So in some way or another, Israel would be allowed to rule over those who had captured them. They would be taking them captive. And it's a little difficult for me to know exactly in what sense this was. "And it shall come to pass in the day that the Lord shall give thee rest from thy sorrow, and from thy fear, and from the hard bondage wherein thou wast made to serve." So what a promise that is to these people now. In that day, he's going to give you rest. Rest from thy sorrow, and from thy fear, and from the hard bondage wherein thou wast made to serve. So it wasn't just a bed of roses while they were down there in Babylonia. We think, as we read through Daniel, that maybe it was pretty nice and easy, but it wasn't, according to this verse. He calls it sorrow and fear and hard bondage wherein they were made to serve. Now we get to a very interesting portion, beginning in verse 4. And we have seen the destruction of Babylon. We have seen the return of God's people back to his land. Now in verse 4, we're going to see the welcoming of the Babylonian king into hell. And this is a very powerful and a very forceful poem here. It's one that the imagery of is unlimited. And the imagination is just, it just goes beyond me to think what this poem creates in our imagination as we think of what happened. First of all, he tells of the rebuff that these Jewish people give to the king of Babylon. Verse 4, "Thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say." Now this proverb, or this parable, or this story, take this up and say this to Babylon. That's what you people who have yet to be captured, that's what you are going to be able to say about your captors ultimately. "How hath the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased. The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted and none hindereth." Nobody's going to come to the rescue of this king of Babylonia now. Nobody's going to come to help him. He who was so great at one time, he persecuted or he smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke. He rules the nations in anger. He now is persecuted and none hindereth. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. Why, it's been such a peaceful respite. It's been such a pleasant change since Babylon now is overthrown, that the whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. And as we think of these sayings applied to the king of Babylon, let us not forget also that somehow or other in a figure they also apply to the enemies of the church today, that is the apostate church. There will come a time in which, when that church is fully overthrown, there will be none that will hinder. None's going to intervene on their behalf. The whole earth is at rest and quiet. And as we see the great chaos that surrounded the church, as we see that quieted down and backed off, and this church released from her captivity, we see then a certain amount of peace and tranquility that could not be had before. They break forth into singing. Yea, the fir trees rejoice at thee, and the cedars of Lebanon sing. Since thou art laid down, no feller is come up against us. Now here he transposes this into a figure of the great forest of Lebanon. This great forest of Lebanon, the fir trees rejoice at thee. And the cedars of Lebanon, they're saying, since thou art laid down, no feller, and the word feller means a woodman or somebody who would fell a tree, no feller has come up against us. Well, we just don't seem to have any enemies now that Babylon is taken out of the way. Well, we've been through all of this 70 years of captivity, the great Assyrian onslaught, and now that they're gone, they're taken out of the captivity, circulation, we don't have any enemies, it seems. The earth is at such peace. The trees don't have to worry about an axeman coming along and cut them down. Well, the whole world breaks into singing. Now, beginning in verse 9, we have the great imagery of hell welcoming the king of Babylon. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. Now, as we think of hell, it's the habitation of the dead, you know. And, of course, there's one habitation for the wicked dead, one habitation for the righteous dead. This would have to be the wicked dead. As we think of this place, we'd have to think of the inhabitants of it, all the people who've gone there, all the wicked who are there now resting and waiting for the judgment. Well, he says, hell is from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It's as though these bodies there in hell were given some life and forced to move or to stand up or to take some notice and make room for the king of Babylon. Stirred to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It has raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. Now, not only is everybody in hell taking notice of this, but he primarily here is talking about the chief ones of the earth, the other kings that have gone on before this king of Babylon. And to get the true picture of this, we think of the burying places that they had for the great people back then, and especially around Jerusalem, I'm told, that they had great subterranean caverns in which they buried these people. And each one had his own birth, so to speak. And the kings were laid out with their arms down at their side and their weapon, that is their sword or whatever weapon they would have at their head, and laid out in an orderly fashion. And if one could go into one of these burying grounds and visit it, it would see these great people laid out there in their tomb. But here we find that even where the chief ones of the earth are, it has raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nation. These kings that were buried were raised up from their thrones to see the king of Babylon come. And notice the kind of a greeting they give him. All they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Why, here the mighty king of Babylon, he's just like we are. He had to die too. He's become weak, just like we become weak. Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials. The worm is spread unto thee, and the worms cover thee. So there's no more pomp now. Regardless of how he ruled and how he reigned in this life and on this earth, there's no more pomp at this time. There's no more greatness now. This would be one of the most solemn of all occasions, to have to leave this life in a state of wickedness and to be greeted there by those in hell waiting for us and to even be chided by them and to be ridiculed and run down by them in the greeting that we receive. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? Now, a strange thing about this next passage is that many of the Bible commentators have come to regard this as a story of the fall of Satan from heaven, as he were an angel in heaven and his fall from heaven as a fallen angel. But the stranger thing yet about this is how they come to think about this passage in that way, because the context here is definitely talking about the king of Babylon. The context is not talking about the devil being welcomed into hell. Why, he was the master of hell. The devil is not being welcomed there on this occasion. This is the king of Babylon. And we need to be cautious here then as we think of this applying to the devil himself, when it really is not in the context and is not stated that way. And I don't know of any passage that really verifies that. And this is a favorite belief of Herbert W. Armstrong. He really alludes this whole thing here to the devil, and he calls the devil Lucifer. Let me read what Mr. Clark says about that particular interpretation. And although the context speaks explicitly concerning Nebuchadnezzar, yet this has been, and I know not why, applied to the chief of the fallen angels, who is most incongruously denominated as Lucifer, the bringer of light, an epithet as common to him as those of Satan and the devil. That the Holy Spirit, by his prophets, should call this arch enemy of God and man the light bringer would be strange indeed. But the truth is, the text speaks nothing at all concerning Satan or his fall, nor the occasion of that fall, which many divines have with great confidence deduced from this text. Oh, how necessary it is to understand the literal meaning of Scripture, that preposterous comments may be prevented. So, as we look at this then, if it does apply to Satan himself, we'd need to have more evidence than just this passage. This is talking about the king of Babylon. And so it says, how thou art fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the cloud. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. Now this king of Babylon, he'd said that he will sit, or he will exalt my throne above the stars of God, and these stars of God could be the Israelite people. He did lord it over them. He did try to make them worship his gods. He did try to make them give up their worship. And we don't know how much he truly regarded himself as being a god or the god. It had been very easy for him with all of his power and all of his capturing conquest to have thought of himself as being some kind of a god. Now where he says, I will sit up also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. There was a definite place that the Lord had made arrangements with the people to meet them. In Exodus 25:22 and in Exodus 29:42-43, he was going to meet with them there before the mercy seat, or he would meet with them at the door of the tabernacle. And it seemed that this king had put himself between these people and their God, that he would be the one that would meet with them, and they would meet with him on his terms and so on. And so now this is being reminded to him, brought to his remembrance as he enters into hell by the inhabitants of hell itself. But he says, yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, now in other words, the people are going to scrutinize you very closely. They're going to look upon you with a close eye, a narrow look, and they're going to consider you, and they're going to say, is this the man that made the earth to tremble and did shake kingdoms? That made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof? That opened not the houses of his prisoners? That's what they're going to say about you, Nebuchadnezzar, when you get there. They're going to say, is this the man that's so great? Did all these terrible things? As they look upon him very closely. All the kings of the nations, even all of them, lie in glory, everyone in his own house. But thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch, and as the raiment of those that are slain, thrust through with a sword, they go down to the pit, to the stones of the pit, as a carcass trodden under feet. Now what they're saying here is that these other kings, even all of them that lie in glory, everyone in his own house, everyone had his own tomb, but you, Nebuchadnezzar, are not even going to be allowed to have a birth in hell. You're going to be thrust down to the stones of the floor, and you're going to be trodden upon, as though you were not fit for a birth as the other kings have in hell. Now, can you imagine a hierarchy in hell among wicked kings? And one being so wicked and so despised by the others that he's not even given a birth there. Well, we're going to close at that point. And then we'd like to begin, though, with this verse 18 next time, and we'll give a little further application of it. Does anybody have any questions or comments up to this point? Well, if not, then we'll begin at that point next time, Lord willing, and further describe what Isaiah says.